Everyone, guess what?
What?
I have been selected.
For what?
Oh, nothing too important, just jury duty. They have summoned me. I am part of an elite group of individuals deemed intelligent enough to decide the fate of a fellow citizen. And the amused laughter of the envious. You know, they don't just pick anybody for this job.
Hey, this is YD from the Hail Evangelist Show, and you're listening to the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network.
Hey, did I tell you guys I got a goat?
That William Penn is guilty of speaking in grace curse speech. You must say that he is guilty of speaking in grace curse speech to an unlawful assembly. Do you understand that? To an unlawful assembly. I want no better advice you, all you gentlemen of the jury, not to play upon the patience of this court. Go out now. Return to me a decent verdict. Bring me the verdict I ask, or by my oath, you shall starve. You shall rot in prison. You shall be carted around the city as was done in ancient times. Bring me my verdict.
Little column A, little column B.
Yeah, baby!
In the summer of 1787, 55 men would gather in the city of Philadelphia. They were tasked with fixing the government of the United States. Over the next 4 months, they would debate, discuss, argue, and refine the first document of its kind in all of history, an attempt to show that men can rule themselves by law. This is the story of those men and those times. This is Constitution Thursday, a time we set aside to read, discuss, study, debate, and learn about the Constitution of the United States, what it meant when it was written, why it was written that way, what it means now, and how it affects our lives each and every day. Here's how you can participate. The text machine is area code 209-565-DAVE. That's 565-3283. The email address is dave@thedavebowmanshow.com, and on the web and social media, just search for Constitution Thursday.
Privilege of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended unless when in cases of rebellion or invasion the public safety may require it. Article 1, Section 9, Clause 2. Good morning, good evening, or good afternoon, wherever you are, whatever you do. A lot of things happening in the world today, but it's Constitution Thursday, so that's all I got to say. So we're going to talk Constitution habeas corpus writs today. Ego biberi capulus et oli viveri. I drink coffee that others might live. Love old-timey radio. CBS Radio used to do a program called You Are There. A little clip from one of those episodes from way back when. Radio was really a lot of fun, a lot of creativity going on. We don't do that much anymore. Article 1, Section 9, Clause 2 of the United States Constitution says the privilege of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended. Shall not be. Shall not be. Unless when in cases of rebellion or invasion, the public safety may require it. Well, that's wordy, isn't it? Rebellion or invasion, but it's a two-part sentence. You can't just do it because there's a rebellion or an invasion. You have to have a rebellion and invasion where the public safety may require the suspension of the writ of habeas corpus. What is the writ of habeas corpus? I hear you cry. Writ of habeas corpus, simplified. We could spend days talking about it, but the writ of habeas corpus is simply the idea that a government cannot just arrest you and put you away just because. If you are familiar at all with history of England and our forefathers and so forth and so on, you know that there was a time in the world, and there are still places in this world, where sultans and princes and kings and potentates and whatever else you might be talking about can just basically decide, I don't like that guy or gal, and I'm just going to put him in jail. Alex had a news story there, an interesting news story about Saudi Arabia, where the prince started his quote-unquote anti-corruption campaign some time ago, and they've decided now that they've completed that, and they've just put people in jail, took their stuff, and so forth and so on. We are very, well, our Constitution, as you can see there, says don't do that. We held the writ of habeas corpus to be very important. And of course, that came out of our tradition under English law. It came out of our tradition under the idea that we were tired of monarchs and leaders and governments who would do that to us. And so, drawing upon that tradition and drawing upon that past, we simply made it clear that our government was not going to do so unless the public safety required it. Which brings us to our topic today. Down in Alabama, there is a man by the name of Sumner Robert Brewster. Now, Sumner Brewster is, he's a bad guy. You can look him up yourself if you want, but he has convictions for various violent crimes dating back, as far as I could find, to 1992. He's just one of those people that you don't really want in society. He's a bad person. He's a person that has armed robbery convictions for violent crimes, so forth and so on. And recently, late last year, he found himself, well, I guess it was a little bit longer ago than that, early last year, he found himself on trial again for committing an armed robbery in the state of Alabama. Now, part of the issue that you have here is that there's a tendency now, and it's a tendency that I've become, disenchanted with amongst governments to push for convictions on things in such ways that it almost becomes apparent that we're just ignoring the rule of law. We're ignoring the ideas and the concepts of the Constitution. And this is something that I want you to understand, that Sumner Brewster is a very bad guy. He is a dreg of humanity. He is a bad guy. But that does not mean that he is not entitled to the protections that our Bill of Rights and our Constitution and our system of law insist and demand upon for having. And somehow or another, I kind of get the feeling sometimes that our legal system, particularly our DAs across the country, they're more interested in their conviction rates than they are in making sure that procedures are followed correctly. And I've said this on numerous occasions. If you don't have a strong enough case to do it right, you don't have a case. So why are you doing this? And we're going to get into some of that more tomorrow from the political element of it, from the viewpoint of those kind of things. It's not really where I intended to go today. But you need to understand that Mr. Brewster is a bad guy. He's had multiple convictions. He's done lots of time in prison. And once again, he finds himself arrested for and being charged with armed robbery. And he is put on trial down in Alabama for this armed robbery. Now, the details of the case are inconsequential to what we're discussing today. The trial lasts about a day and a half, and at 11:53 on the second day of the trial, the jury is handed the case, they're given their instructions, and they are sent to the jury room with, go forth and deliberate this case. That's at 11:53. So you figure there's a lunch break in there, and they come back, and after a couple of hours, now again, the sense you get from this is, A, this is a very bad guy. B, this is a slam dunk case. And at 2:55, the jury sends the judge a message saying, so what happens if we don't have a unanimous verdict? What happens if we're a split jury? Well, under the laws of the state of Alabama, under this particular case, it has to be unanimous. So the judge sends a note back saying, you need to keep deliberating. You need to keep working at this. And this goes on back and forth and back and forth. These messages go back and forth from the judge to the jury. And finally, they go home for that night because it's obvious they're not going to get to go to a verdict today. But before they go home, the judge has them brought back into the courtroom and he reads to them what is known as an Allen charge. Now, an Allen charge is a jury instruction that has been kind of molded by the Supreme Court. It came out of a Supreme Court case some time ago when how to deal with juries that are deadlocked, because there's a lot of effort being involved here. And They want to make sure that the jury is really doing its job. And so an Allen charge actually has verbiage that was written by the U.S. Fifth Circuit Court that is very direct. Members of the jury, I'm going to ask you to continue deliberations in order to, in an effort to reach agreement upon a verdict and dispose of this case. This is an important case. The trial has been expensive in time, effort, money, and emotional strain. If you should fail to agree on a verdict, the case will be left open and may have to be tried again. Obviously, another trial would only serve to increase the costs for both sides. And there's no reason to believe that the case can be tried again by either side any better or more exhaustively than it has been tried before you. And this thing goes on. It's a full page long. And it is, the idea here is to encourage the jury to go back and get the verdict that we want. Bring me my verdict, is almost what the judge is saying. Now, the 22 states have rejected this in whole or part. There's some reasons why, and frankly, I wonder if the Allen charge, based on the case we're going to read here, I'm kind of wondering if it shouldn't just be junked altogether. It's problematic in a lot of ways, but it is problematic because we don't do things that way. The jury went home that night. They came back the next morning. They started up again. They sent the judge another note saying, wait, who are you? And they didn't actually say that. Overnight, for some reason, and we do not know why, there was a new judge. All of a sudden, the first judge went away and the second judge came in. And so it's kind of like, well, who are you? We were expecting Judge Ted, and now we've got Judge Steve, and we don't know what's going on here. But at any rate, we're still deadlocked. And we took your Allen charge, and we molded over in our heads, and we re-deliberated this whole thing, and now we're still deadlocked. We were deadlocked 9-3, then it was 10-2, and now it's 11-1, and we've got one holdout. The new judge said, go back and keep deliberating. Now, when you hear those words, what do you actually hear in your mind? What is the judge actually saying? Is he actually saying, okay, this one person is so convinced that that he's not guilty or do you hear the judge saying, get me my guilty verdict? Then you go back in the room, they start deliberating again. This time, though, they send yet another note out, and this time they're kind of complaining. Look, the juror that's the holdout is doing crossword puzzles. They're just sitting there doing crossword puzzles. They're not deliberating. They're not discussing. They're not debating. They're refusing to participate. They're just doing crossword puzzles. And so the judge righteously, indignantly raises his hand and orders the bailiff to go into the jury room and remove anything and everything that can be written on except the yellow pads and the pencils that they have for that. They can write on those. Nothing else can be in there. No crosswords, no jumbos, none of that stuff. No newspapers, nothing, no reading material at all. And of course, the bailiff dutifully goes in and does that. And 18 minutes later, you with me here? 18 minutes later, the jury returns a unanimous verdict of guilty against Mr. Brewster, and he is sentenced to life without the possibility of parole because he is a career criminal, and he has been once again found guilty of creating mayhem and robbing people at gunpoint. And this, of course, is a problem. So they're not going to allow this to happen. On the surface of it, how does that make you feel? On the surface of it, do you look at that and go, well, it's about damn time they did their jobs. It's about time. Of course, Mr. Brewster's attorneys, his new attorneys, because he got new attorneys, appealed this to the Alabama court system because they said it was a violation of his rights as an accused. He did not have effective counsel because nobody objected. Not once did any of his attorneys object to what the judge was telling the jury. Alabama Supreme Court looked at it and went, you kidding? No, this is fine. We like this. Put that guy away for life. And so they did. Now, this time, Mr. Brewster's attorneys went to the federal courts and they started saying, wait a minute, can't do this. They violated his constitutional rights. They violated his rights as an accused. They are essentially holding him without cause. They're violating habeas corpus because no one, because he did not have effective representation and he should not have been convicted like this. But what is it they're complaining about? What is it that they have a problem with? They had a problem with the judge and the instructions that the jury was given. They had a problem with the Allen charge, obviously, because a lot of states do. I have problems with it. I read it several times and went, yeah, that makes me really uncomfortable. The idea of a judge lecturing the jury that, hey, how can you not find this guy guilty? We've put a lot of money, effort, and in it. It's almost like saying, look, I need you to come back with a guilty verdict because that's what everybody wants. He's pressuring the jury. And then to go in and remove the crossword puzzle with no objection from the defense attorneys, 18 minutes later you get a guilty verdict, that's a problem. That's a big problem. And how do we know it's a problem? Well, we got to go back in time. We got to go back to the year 1670. I know it's a long time ago. I know you're probably saying, Dave, what does that have to do with the United States of America? 1670, there wasn't a United States of America. Hell, in 1670, Dave, there wasn't even a colony of Pennsylvania yet. Right? William Penn. Yes, that William Penn. The guy who is going to found Pennsylvania as a Quaker colony is arrested. He is in the streets of London preaching to a group of people. This is against the law in England. You cannot do this unless you happen to be a member of the Church of England. If you're a member of the Church of England, you can preach to anybody you want, anytime you want. But if you are not, and William Penn is not, you cannot do that. And anything more than, I think it's five people, according to the law, becomes an unlawful assembly under English law, under the king's law, because the king not only is the crown, he's not only in charge, but he is the titular head of the Church of England. And so you are essentially thumbing your nose at the King of England at this point, who's a guy by the name of Charles II, and you are in violation of the law. And so, of course, Mr. Penn and his compatriots are arrested and they are put on trial in Old Bailey, the original Old Bailey courthouse in London, England. Now, William Penn, he's had an interesting life, folks. William Penn is, he's kind of the antithetical American colonist. Yes, he is going to found the colony of Pennsylvania. And you may wonder how that's going to come about, because right now he's under arrest and on trial for essentially telling the king to go away. Well, you need to understand that William Penn is a very rich man. He's a very rich young man. His father is very, very wealthy. He is now dead by 1660. 1670, his father's dead. And, you know, William Penn has inherited most of that, including, this is important, including all of the debts owed to his father. His father has made a great deal of money loaning people money, and a great deal of people still owed his father a lot of money. And just because his father died doesn't mean those debts go away. They are still owed just now to his progeny, which happens to be William Penn, who, as a typical rich kid, has gone around the nation doing rich kid things. He went to Ireland for a while. He tried to become a soldier for a while. He had a portrait painted of himself wearing armor like the old knights. And he's just your typical spoiled rich kid. He really is. And then one day he has a religious conversion and he becomes a diehard Quaker, which is kind of a strange thing to say, but it's true. He becomes a real hardcore Quaker. There's a reason why Pennsylvania is called the Quaker State. It is founded as a colony by William Penn for Quakers. It's where they go. It's what they do. It's what they love. It's why Penn's oil is the Quaker State oil and so forth and so on. His conversion doesn't change his personality in that he's still kind of an obnoxious you know, loudmouth, but he is now fully Quaker, and he objects strenuously to these laws that the king has passed, which prohibit him from sharing his Quaker beliefs on the street corners. And he feels that these are a gross violation of an Englishman's right to speak publicly and assemble publicly. All these things sound familiar, right to assembly, right to free speech, right to religion. These things sound familiar to you, I hope. I really hope you're seeing the connection there. And so he goes out in the streets of London, starts preaching, gets arrested. He goes to on trial in Old Bailey. This trial, it becomes one of the most famous trials in the history of England. It is a trial that is followed in the papers. It is followed by crowds. It is the king is following this trial because he's deeply concerned, obviously, here. It becomes a pivotal moment in the history of not just English law, but becomes a pivotal moment because it's 1670. In 100 years, 120 years, the American framers are going to sit down and draft a constitution. And their corporate experience involves one of their own founding members of a colony. He's, you know, long dead by now, but they understand this history. William Penn's trial is, folks, it's a circus. I mean, it really is. The judges, and there are multiple judges, are absolutely, I mean, this is, you think we have slam dunk prosecutors today, nothing like in that era. In that era, there was just this, it was almost pro forma, this idea of having a jury to rubber stamp the judge's decree of guilty. But the problem is, the jury in the trial of William Penn, and I don't have time to go through the whole thing. It's fascinating reading. And it's CBS Radio did a You Are There thing. I'll link that on the page so you can listen to it. It's about 30 minutes long, but it's well worth the listen if you get time. And the jury basically balks at this and says, no, we're not convicting him of violating the law. We're not going to, they'll convict him of speaking in public, but not of speaking in public to an unlawful assembly. It's the jury's way of saying, we're nullifying your law. We don't believe that your law is in keeping with English tradition and English law. We just don't. And the judges become furious. They are screaming at the jury that they must find him guilty. They must say that he is guilty of speaking to an unlawful assembly. And if they don't, there will be consequences. The jury initially is hung at 11 to 1. There's one guy holding out. But then the judge starts throwing his threats around. He threatens to brand the holdout guy. He's going to brand him. I mean, with a hot poker iron thing, he's going to brand him. He's going to put them all in jail and starve them. No food, no water. In fact, he does put the entire jury into jail in the cell right next to William Penn and his compatriots. He yells at them. And each time they come back, and he demands, have you given me my verdict? Well, it was 11 to 1. Now it's 9 to 3. Now it's 8 to 5. Now it's 6-6. Now it's 4-8. And eventually, it's a unanimous jury saying, we're not going to give in to you, judge. And he is screaming and yelling. He wants them dragged through the streets of London in a cart so that they can, listen to this phrase, bounce out a verdict. Because sooner or later, the one that's holding out will bounce out of the cart and they'll get their unanimous verdict. He screams and yells at them, and he just absolutely is just inanely furious at this. He never does get his verdict against William Penn, who, by the way, one of the people that owes him a whole lot of money, and I mean a lot of money, is King Charles. So King Charles, you can see, has a vested interest in perhaps seeing Mr. Penn go to prison for life. And in fact, when he doesn't go to prison for life because, you know, he's not a, really a bad guy, the king negotiates his debt with Charles, with William Penn, and gives him what will become Pennsylvania as compensation. William Penn goes to America, establishes his colony. Meanwhile, this judge continues to put, and he finally decides to put the one guy, the guy that Bushell that held out strenuously, and puts him on trial for defying this judge and for contempt of court, and he loses that case because that jury holds out on him. And the idea that the Crown Court finally realizes that you can't just hold people in jail because you have no reason to. That's a violation of Englishman's rights of habeas corpus. The writ of, you know, produce a reason why you're holding this guy. And if the reason you're holding this guy is because you're mad at him, or you're mad at the jury, that's not a good enough reason to hold him. And when you start interfering with the jury's ability to make a decision, that's bad too. You're violating his habeas corpus. You're violating his rights as the accused. Justice Judge Ed Crane of the 11th Circuit Court said it very clearly and very plainly in the case of Mr. Brewster. You know, the minute you took that thing away from that woman, that crossword away from that juror, who I assume is a woman, I don't know. The minute you took that away from her, you removed her protection from being able to stand by what she believed was right. And that violates habeas corpus, and that is not permitted under our system. What's remarkable is that it had to go all the way to the 11th Circuit Court to get a ruling like that. The lower courts and the Alabama state courts didn't be able to seem to figure that out. That bothers me tremendously that they weren't able to figure that out. Because all the way back to William Penn, we as Americans have this understanding that the jury is a bulwark against government corruption and government steamrolling over people's rights. And imagine if we the people as jurors began to see our role that way instead of inconvenience and a pain in the butt and I don't want to go do this. What if we saw it as it's my job to stop the government from doing something bad? Something to think about. I got to go. Take the time right now. Tell the people that matter in your life you love them very much. You'd miss them if they weren't there. So don't pass up those opportunities. You don't want to have that regret. Plausibly Live, I'm Dave Bowman. This is my show, The Dave Bowman Show. Here every Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. Pacific time. And we will see you tomorrow for a Friday episode of The Dave Bowman Show. Have a great rest of your Thursday, everybody.
The Dave Bowman Show is a Slippery Fish Entertainment production for the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. For more information or to complain about how the show offended you, the text or voicemail number is 209-565-DAVE. For more information about the show, log on to thedavebowmanshow.com.
Hey, I'm going to go do something productive. I'm going to go watch television.